machine. What? Demanded Harris, his voice cracking high in alarm. That's right. Remember that flying platform? One of them just swooped down and nailed the camp a few minutes ago. Maybe that's why the enemy was standing around here waiting. They seemed to know just where to hit us, and they took out the medical bunker.
But, sir, Harris said, looking around in alarm, can I assume we're synced up with the other valleys for revivals? We just lost a lot of people. We can't have all these troops permed.
Leeson looked at him. Don't worry, vet. I'm sure the techs are working on it. Now, let's talk about taking that ship. He pointed toward the yawning ramps. They were all still fully extended. Inside, the ship looked cavernous and black.
Shouldn't we wait until the revival machines are...
No, said Leeson firmly. We're moving out now. Graves is dead, so I'm assuming command of what's left of this unit. We're not going to fold into the other units right now. There isn't time. We have to take advantage of the situation. Harris began to argue, but I could see Leeson's point. That's right, sir, I said. The squids might wise up and close their hatches any second now. Leeson nodded.
Here, McGill, take this.
He handed me a new plasma cannon. For a second, I didn't understand why he'd given it to me. But then I noticed that the indicator lights on mine were locked red. The unit had overloaded during the last blast and hadn't recovered. It would take a tech hours to fix it, if it could be done at all. The new weapon had a few dents in it, but it looked serviceable.
Where did this come from? I asked.
Sargon died with it in his hands, Leeson said. I'm sure he'd be happy to know you had it now. I wasn't so sure he'd be happy, but I took the weapon anyway and discarded my own unit. I plugged it into the grid, slapped in a fresh cartridge, and gave Leeson the thumbs up.
Come on at a trot now, Leeson shouted. Advance!
Harris and I followed. We moved toward the nearest ramp. The other two Centurions had teams of their own, heading toward the ramp as well. If I had to guess, I'd say there were less than 200 of us left alive. I had to wonder what was going on back at camp. If the enemy had attacked the camp and taken out the bio people, I was certain we weren't going to be seeing any reinforcements up here at the front. The ramp was so huge, it looked unreal. It must have been a meter thick and made of pure black metal. The hull of this thing was dense and dull in color.
This is bullshit, Harris complained. Total bullshit. We should fall back and hold our position waiting for fresh troops.
They might seal the ship by that time, vet, I said. Harris didn't seem to hear me.
Hell, they could be flying them in from the other valleys by now, he said. If the Tribune really wanted to win this fight, he could do it now. I don't get the brass sometimes, I really don't.
Harris went on like that as we mounted the ramp and clanged into the interior. I knew what he was really upset about, of course. He liked dying even less than the rest of us. But the idea of dying without a revival machine waiting for you back at camp. Well, to a member of Legion Varus, that sounded just plain wrong. Getting permed was a fate for some other loser, not for one of us. Once we reached the top of the ramp and entered the ship itself, a cool gloom closed over us. Dozens of troopers hustled in behind me. I think every one of us slowed down when we actually stepped into the ship. It was hard not to. The ship was different. You just knew, looking around, that your tiny little human ass didn't belong here. The ship had been built by true aliens, aliens so utterly different from us that they didn't have much in the way of recognizable features on the distant walls or the high ceiling. There were no markings, no lights, and no flashing symbols. Instead, there were sweeping streaks of glimmering reflections on the floor of the ship. I hadn't seen the phenomenon in the ramp itself, but here in the dim interior, it was unmistakable.
Is that writing of some kind? I asked Harris.
He frowned at me, then frowned at the deck.
Looks like various metals all mixed together.
I think it's more complex than that, I said. The metal is reflective. Various tones of silver and dark gray mixed in flowing streaks.
I know what the hell it looks like, Harris snapped. I'm trotting along next to you. Don't you think I have eyes? Forget the damn floor, McGill. Look for targets.
He had a point there. I lifted my eyes and peered into the vast, dark chamber we were marching farther into every second. The place was strange. It seemed to have a closeness to it, even though it was obviously huge. "Mists," I said, waving my hands at the air that seemed to coalesce and move around me like thick, silvery smoke. "The atmosphere in here..." I broke off as a screeching sound began. I turned to see who was in trouble. A trooper was down right behind me. I grimaced, realizing it was Keevy. "Back up! Give us some air!" shouted Harris. I could see Keevy's face. She was in agony, and her visor was up. "No!" I shouted. "Close her visor! She doesn't need air. She needs to keep her visor shut!" Harris finally got what I was suggesting. He reached down and closed Keevy's faceplate. I could see her in there, still squirming in pain and dying. It was too late for her. "Leeson!" I shouted. "Nanites, sir! We've got clouds of nanites in the air. I think they're on the floor everywhere, being activated as we walk by. Close all vents and faceplates."
"Do it!" shouted Leeson.
Six more people went down before we'd all buttoned up our suits. While troopers milled around and tried to help their stricken comrades, I cranked my weapon, broadening the beam to its widest setting. I fired an experimental cone into the air. Leeson was all over me for that.
"What do you see?"
he demanded, staring upward. I pointed at the deck.
"Look, see that fine grit? Those are dead nanites. They look kind of like graphite dust."
Leeson stared. Finally, he got it. He passed the word on. Soon we were marching behind a line of weaponeers who were hosing down every centimeter of the ship's hull and even the air around us with broad blasts from their cannons. But that was costing too much power. We halted our advance and retreated 100 steps. I looked over my shoulder toward the open door behind me. Outside, the sun blazed. "We haven't even made it very far into the ship," I said. "I think these nanites are like watchdogs. Maybe they know friend from foe." Leeson shook his head and conferred with the other centurions. They weren't sure how to proceed. I went out into the sunshine again and stood on the ramp looking around. Harris came out to join me.
"This is a Charlie Foxtrot," he said,
and I had to agree with him.
"Look over there," Harris said, pointing. "There are those colonist buddies of yours. They're probably having a good laugh at our troubles."
Surprised, I followed his jabbing finger. He was right. A few colonist fighters were in the area we'd come from, squatting on some of the same rocks. "They're usually brave with us in front of them," I said. "You mind if I go talk to them?"
"Suit yourself," Harris said. "But don't go running off down any of those rabbit holes with them. I won't cover for you if you do."
His statement baffled me. I couldn't recall Harris covering for me on any occasion, or for anyone else. I walked up to the colonists calmly with my weapons and hands down. They eyed me with flat stares. No one waved or shouted a greeting. I guess I would have to count myself lucky they weren't shooting at me with their crossbows. I saw they were in battle gear as I drew near. Rather than the near naked state they'd been in while underground or hunting, they were in black, loose-fitting clothes. Their faces were painted with cooling paint that would hide their heat signatures. They held their weapons loosely, but I could tell they were ready to snap them up and fight if I made the wrong move. "Hello," I called when I was about 10 meters away. "Can you guys help us out?" They looked from one to the other and shook their heads bemusedly. I thought I might have recognized one or two of them. I hoped Della would be among them, but she wasn't. "We found hostile nanites inside the ship," I said. "They seem to be all over the place, killing our troops if we go inside too far." One man broke ranks and stepped up to me. He was short in stature, but had wide, muscular shoulders and a sure-footed stance.
"Those nanites are not ours," he said.
"Yeah, I figured that. But do you know how to switch them off to get past them?"
"Yes," he said. "You must strip away all your gear. Find manacles and apply them to each wrist. Cross your arms so they clasp firmly and can't be pulled apart. When you are naked and helpless, the nanites will let you pass and join your new masters."
I didn't like his explanation or his attitude. I nodded to him. Thanks a lot for that valuable information. Too bad none of you are brave enough to enter this ship or smart enough to figure out a way to pass the nanites. Don't worry, we'll do the job for you. Go back and hide in your holes. You might get a sunburn or a bug bite out here. Wouldn't want that to happen to civvies.
The short guy's smile faded. I think he understood that I'd insulted him. This made me happy. As I turned to go, he called me back.
What is this you call us? What is a civvy?
Civilian. A non-combatant. Someone who must be protected from harm by real soldiers.
The colonists looked from one to the next. They were all frowning now.
I'm a scout, said the short guy. This is my team. We're not civvies.
I laughed.
Really? Then come on inside the ship with us and end this fight. Put up or shut up, civvy.
I walked away without bothering to look back. If there was one thing I couldn't abide, it was a mouthy, arrogant bystander who complained behind your back and didn't have the guts to join the fight himself. Harris looked at me quizzically as I mounted the ramp and returned to his side. Leeson walked over to join us as well. Leeson gestured behind me.
You want to introduce your new friends? He asked.
I turned in surprise. The colonists had quietly followed me up the ramp. They didn't look happy, but I could tell they were game. There were seven altogether, and their eyes roved around the interior of the big ship. I was impressed by their bravery, as I knew this vessel had come straight from hell as far as they were concerned.
Yeah, I said. These are warriors, a scout and his crew. What is your name, sir?
I asked the short guy.
Alders, he said. My name is Alders.
Scout Alders, I repeated to Leeson. He's the toughest of their fighters. Think of them as native guides.
Harris and Leeson looked at the colonists suspiciously.
Alders, for his part, had swelled up with pride during my introduction.
Where is the investigator? Leeson asked. If you're helping us, what has he been doing?
Alders looked surprised.
Do you not know? We thought that with your instrumentation... Well, it doesn't matter. I'll tell you now, the investigator is keeping this ship grounded.
Leeson's eyes widened.
How?
By manipulating fields. The ship uses twin dishes for propulsion when close to our planet. Surely you've seen them at either end.
We nodded, listening closely.
Those dishes generate the energy field surrounding the ship. They also propel it. We've interfered with those emanations, forcing them to stay on the ground. We've prepared for years for this day. We might have taken their ship by now if it hadn't been for your arrival and interference.
I think you're talking big, short guy, Harris said.
Leeson promptly whacked him in the chest with his knuckles. It did my eyes good to see that. A few things clicked for me as I thought over what Alders had said. I realized this ship should have been leaving.
If I was this ship's captain, I said, and enemy troops were wandering into my hold, I would take off.
All right, then, Leeson said. You're doing your part. That's great. How can you help us capture the ship?
Alders and his crew are going to get us past these watchdog nanites, I said.
Yes, Alders agreed. We can do that, I think.
Chapter 30 Alders and his crew opened up vials of dust and were carefully sprinkling it ahead of them as they edged forward. The nanite watchdogs had lain down in silver rivers all over the deck when we'd retreated, but now that new alien nanites of a darker shade were detected, a strange battle took place. Twin swarms rose up in a whirlwind cloud. There was no breeze, but they flew in a deadly embrace anyway. The colonist nanites seemed superior. I don't think they'd been programmed to fight other nanites. They had been designed to tear up flesh that didn't match the configuration they'd been built to recognize, and that's it. We watched the battle from a safe distance. Steadily, the dark nanites of the colonists ate up the silver swarm the cephalopods had left as a trap for the unwary.
"Where did you guys get this technology?" I asked Alders. It seems so advanced.
The investigator and his students have bred these metal creatures, he told me.
They did it in the same manner the cephalopods manipulated our flesh, bending it to their purposes. These tiny constructs are our greatest achievement. We've been working on them for years, preparing for the next visit.
Leeson stepped up, fascinated.
I'm impressed, he said. You copied the tech, didn't you? You stole the cephalopod design and made it your own. These nanites are similar, but they're a breed apart.
Essentially, yes.
What powers them? I asked.
Sunlight, flesh, heat, various things depending on the breed. This particular type of creature feeds upon emissions from the ship.
A tech happened by, and I realized it was Natasha.
These things are amazing. Can we have a sample?
Alders eyed her critically.
I would like to trade.
Natasha gave him a replacement tapper and a few power cells in trade for a tube of nanites.
Are they dangerous? She asked.
Only if you are a rival nanite, Alders said, smiling.
The battle in the hold was soon over. The nanite swarms died down, one group having destroyed the other. I had to wonder what these things would look like under a microscope. I suspected they'd resemble insects made of metal. We pressed ahead, knowing that the enemy wasn't beaten yet. It didn't feel good walking into an alien ship full of unknown traps. The squids were orderly. You could at least say that about them. There were literally thousands of tons of equipment in the hold. Foodstuffs, weapons, cages. This last surprised me, but I guess it shouldn't have. We'd found thousands of man cages. About 2 meters square, they were built with thick, lusterless metal and outfitted with receptacles for both feeding and elimination. Just looking at those cages gave me a sick feeling. How many of my fellow humans had spent their lives inside them? All of them were empty. Where had the occupants gone? Our expedition paused again when we ran into a blank bulkhead. We'd figured out by that time that we were in some kind of central hold. Probably invasion forces gathered here before sallying out down the ramps. We had no answers, so we took a right turn and followed the walls to a ramp. The ramp led upward into hanging darkness.
Let me guess, I said to Leeson, who stood at my side. Weaponeers first.
He looked concerned and glanced back toward the other officers. They had a little huddle and decided to send up a few grunts instead. The last weaponeers had been deemed too vital to the mission to waste them on this particular duty. Four heavy troopers marched up the ramp ahead of me, looking like scared rabbits. I wondered if I'd looked so nervous when I was leading a team into what could be a deadly situation. I hoped not. "Don't piss yourselves all at once," I called after them. All I got from my trouble was a finger flicked up from a single gauntlet. I chuckled, but my amusement was cut short. Just as they reached the top of the ramp, long tubular things reached out from both sides. Like elephant trunks, 12 tentacles snaked out and snatched the troopers from our view. They grappled each man and retracted. It happened so fast, so methodically, the team barely had time to react. One man in the group managed to get his force blade out and use it effectively. A single tentacle was lopped off and fell, writhing and flopping. It rolled down the ramp toward us. I didn't wait for orders. I rushed forward with my weapon at my shoulder, priming up. I'd already cranked my tube's aperture wide open, prepping it for short-range fire. Leeson was calling after me, saying something. There were shouts and tramping feet. I didn't get what he'd said, but I didn't much care either. I knew I was one of the few who could do anything serious to these damned squids. The first one I saw loomed directly ahead about 10 meters away. He was at the top of the ramp. I halted to sight on him, a grim smile darkening my face. I squeezed the trigger, but to my shock, I squeezed it into nothing. The weapon had been snatched from my grasp. What happened next made me a little sick. Another squid had been hiding out of sight on the right side of the ramp, sitting in ambush on the next deck of the ship. They had an amazing reach and could do things with any of their 8 arms we mere humans couldn't manage with both of ours. Once I'd been disarmed, a total of 3 squids launched themselves down the ramp. They knocked me down on the way past, almost throwing me off the ramp. But I hung on and stood back up. The charging squids ran into our line of men, and a wild melee began.
The alien who'd taken my weapon now dipped down into plain sight, hanging over my head like a spider on a wall. He had my tube. I reached for it, but he held it out of range. Depressing the firing stud with the squirmy tip of his ropey appendage, he fired my comrades. A cone of burning plasma enveloped half a dozen troopers. The beam was too diffuse to burn through our armor, but we all had weak points. One was our visors, which cracked wide. A fraction of a second later, the human faces behind the protective barrier smoked, then bubbled. Screaming, one man reeled and threw himself off the ramp. He fell at least 20 meters to the deck below. Two others did the same, while the rest dropped and rolled down the ramp, crashing into those who ran to give aid. Sporadic fire erupted from the lower deck, splattering energy onto the squid above me. The squid wasn't looking too good at this point. He'd taken a dozen hits. He must have known that his move would expose him to our weapons, but maybe he'd thought it would be worth it. He also didn't seem to understand our weapons very well. He kept the firing stud on my cannon depressed, hosing down the line of approaching legionnaires with a continuous stream of energy. After about 2 full seconds, it overheated, and the gas chamber ruptured. It sort of popped, sounding like a big light bulb, and stopped operating. By that time, I'd gotten my force blades out and was stabbing the monster repeatedly. I thrust and cut. It took long seconds of chopping at it before the thing finally slid down and rolled away down the ramp as dead as a fish in a barrel. The rest of the unit behind me got their act together then. Harris was the first man to reach me. I honestly misread his eagerness. Silly me, I thought he might be happy I'd taken one out. Instead, he bashed me one and pointed at his blackened shoulder.
"See this, McGill, you stupid cowboy son of a bitch. That squid murdered half a squad, and he did it with your weapon, McGill."
"Yeah," I said. "I didn't see that coming."
"Open your visor, specialist," Harris said.
I could see more than a little crazy was going on in his eyes. "Why, vet?" He pulled out his sidearm.
"Specialist McGill, that was a direct order. Are you disobeying a direct order?"
I flipped up my visor, and he punched me. I managed to turn my head a bit so he didn't break my nose, but my cheekbone felt like it had been smashed with a hammer. "Happy?" I asked, but it came out sounding funny. I realized that my teeth had been driven into my upper lip. His gauntlet had caught more than just my cheek. I lowered my head and reached up with my fingers to tug at my lips, which were now stuck on my teeth. Harris lowered himself into a crouch so he could look me in the eye.
"No, I'm not happy yet," he told me. "I'll tell you when I'll be happy, hero. The next time I see you die on this little bug hunt."
I wanted to hit him. I really did, but I sort of understood his rage. I'd advanced without orders. The squid had gotten my weapon and taken out a number of my own men. We'd won the fight, but quite possibly we could have done it with fewer losses. Leeson loomed over me.
"Specialist, are you still functional?"
"Ready and able, sir," I said as clearly as I could. I got to my feet, trying not to sway. I thought that Harris had messed me up worse than the squid itself, but kept quiet. I knew that if I wasn't able to fight while on a critical mission like this, I might well be giving my superiors just cause to recycle me. They wouldn't want to simply leave me behind while they advanced. If they did that, I might be captured, and thus not be a candidate for revival. Not being able to revive a heavily trained specialist would inconvenience the Legion. Leeson looked me over critically, then eyed Harris. He knew what had happened. It was obvious.
"Up the ramp," he said. "A weaponeer without a weapon is just a slow-moving heavy trooper. You're on point, McGill."
Unsurprised, I marched up the ramp to the top. I didn't want to die, but I cared less than usual right now if I did. There were no squids at the top of the ramp. The deck was different, however. It was full of heavy equipment and machines that were alien to me. We marched past generators the size of houses and other bigger machines that I couldn't begin to identify. Maybe they were engines, or maybe they ran the life support systems. I thought they powered the big cannon on the top of the ship. Whatever they were, we didn't damage them. It was just possible this ship could be useful to us if we could take it from the present owners. What came to my attention as we mounted the next ramp upward was a serious stink. I'm not talking about an easy-going stench like one might find at the local landfill, sewer farm, or dairy. I'm talking about the sharp, finger-up-the-nostril stench that only a concentrated amount of human waste can produce. I closed my visor, of course, but it was a little too late for that. We had come to the living space of beings we called littermates. The evidence was unmistakable. Groups of coffin-like boxes had been arranged into sets of nine. These coffins thronged the deck. We counted them, and they came pretty close to the number we'd slain. "Looks like we got them all," I said. "Maybe the ship is empty."
"Don't bet on it, McGill," Harris told me. "Ain't no way you're living through this to the end."
Despite his prediction, I was beginning to feel upbeat. There was only one more ramp and one more deck to go. Before we reached the last ramp, we found the captives. They were locked up in rows upon rows of stacked man cages. The people inside were dark-eyed, haunted. None of them spoke. The man, who was still game, was Stott. I found him and released him. He scuttled off into the shadows without even saying thank you. We found Hudson on the last row, on the bottom of the final stack. He'd been abused horribly. There were burns all over his naked body. His eyes were gone. And I mean gone. They'd been burned away. All that was left was fresh scar tissue and dripping fluids. "Hudson?" I asked when I found him.
"Is that you, McGill?"
I rattled at the cage, but it held firm. "We've got to get him out, sir," I told Leeson.
"Yeah, we will. First, can you answer a few questions, Hudson?"
"I'll try, sir."
"You're in bad shape. Why are the colonists looking so much healthier than you?"
"They aren't as dumb as I am, sir. They kept quiet and did as they were told. I tried to provoke these squids. The colonists call them masters. Can you believe that?"
"Yeah,"
Leeson said, his face screwing up in disgust as he looked Hudson over. Harris and Leeson exchanged glances that Hudson couldn't see. They both shook their heads. I knew what that meant. Hudson was too injured to recover in any reasonable fashion. He had to be recycled to heal up. Basically, he needed a whole new body. It would be a mercy, really. Leeson drew his sidearm and crouched in front of the cage. I worked on breaking the lock, but it wasn't easy to do.
"Talk to me, Hudson," the adjunct said. "Why are you so messed up? Was this done in reprisal for our fighting outside?"
"No, I don't think so. After they captured me and brought me to these cages, I asked the other prisoners how I could escape. They said you could only escape through death. So I tried to piss them off enough to get them to kill me. Other colonists managed it, but the squids really didn't want to kill me. They burned me, but they kept me alive. I think they wanted to take me home and really go to work on me to find out what makes our kind different."
I looked around at the dull-eyed prisoners. I thought I understood why they were so quiet, so resigned. They'd given up. The fighters among them were already dead.
"Anything else you could tell us about the enemy?"
Leeson asked.
"Not much. I think the squid stronghold is one floor up. By that I mean their quarters and the bridge. They usually came from up there when they wanted to prod me."
"Right. Thanks for the input. You've done well, soldier."
"Sir, could I ask one thing?"
"What's that?"
"Could you have McGill do the honors? I saw him do the rest of our team when I still had eyes. I wanted him to get to me, but he didn't make it. I was the last man alive on that ramp, and now I truly wish I'd been lucky enough to die with the rest of them."
Leeson looked at the gun in his hand. Hudson knew it was there, even if he couldn't see it. Leeson looked up at me, squinting. I must have looked pretty long in the face, because what he did next surprised me.
"All right," Leeson said. "McGill, do it."
Then he raised his pistol and shot Hudson in the head. I knew it was an act of kindness. First off, Hudson had been seeking a way out of his current life for days. He'd been tortured and now had finally managed to die. We all knew he'd get a new body this way. Maybe he'd even get lucky, and some of the memories of his final days in this cage would be lost, as he'd been isolated from the group and our recording systems. Secondly, Leeson had done the job as a favor to me. He'd taken on a grim burden that I clearly didn't want weighing on me. I thought better of Adjunct Leeson after that. Chapter 31. The squids made their last stand on the ship's bridge. We could tell that the investigators' efforts hadn't been in vain, as they did their damnedest to get the ship flying right up until the end. "We've got to take them now," I told Leeson, who'd called a halt just out of range of the enemy. "What if they fix this ship?" "They won't. Alder said the investigator guy took care of it." Strangely enough, Leeson was in command now. Out of 3 full units of 100 troops each, we'd lost all 3 of the Centurions. Graves had died first, and the second Centurion hadn't made it into the ship. The last one had died on the ramp when the squids first ambushed us. That had left Leeson in charge, as he was the most superior adjunct left. That wasn't good, because he wasn't the most decisive man in the Legion. "Sir, can we trust this situation to continue unchanged? If this ship manages to launch while we're waiting around with our fingers..." "Don't give me that look, Specialist," Leeson told me. "We've had a tough time of it, and we're going to do the last part by the book. We'll wait here for the next 3 units. The Primus is in contact with me through relayed buzzers and nanite wire. I've got her approval to hold here until relief arrives. We don't know what their final defenses will be like on the bridge." I twisted up my lips, which hurt, as Harris had torn them apart with his punch. They were starting to swell now. "Sir," I said, "I'm going to give you my private opinion, then I'm going to shut up." He grinned at me. "That'll be a first, McGill, and I'm going to hold you to it." "Look, sir, what if they manage to get this ship to fly right now? We don't know anything about how the colonists sabotage them. If they lift off with us trapped in here, well..." I saw the adjunct's eyes light up. He finally got it. He was risking all our skins on a hunch that the colonists knew what the heck they were doing, and the squids didn't. That was quite a bet in my book. I knew why he wanted to wait for backup. It was the safer bet. Why take any more losses when we could gather up hundreds of fresh troops and do it without further bloodshed on our part? But it was just too risky, flying off into space. That could get a man permed, and we both knew it. Leeson stood up and straightened his kit. He addressed everyone on the general comm channel. "Troops, we've got one more job to do. We're going to finish this, one way or the other. Gear up in advance. I want a squad on each flank, and remember not to mass up in the center. We'll hit them fast with a steady advance, firing as we go. Oh, and try not to hit their equipment if you can. Force blades in close. Shorten up the length, and be sure of your targets." We were on the move again less than a minute later. Harris and the other vets screamed at anyone who didn't get up fast enough. Laggards were roughly propelled toward the enemy. I thought the vets might have figured out the score on their own. When we finally got to the bridge, we found it was only lightly defended. There were only about 10 aliens left alive. Still, squids are tough, and they gave us plenty of trouble despite their small numbers. The aliens that had survived and now awaited our long march through the entrails of their vast ship were injured and desperate. I saw them at the controls as we approached. They were still working at them with tools and flaring lights that must have been welding torches of some kind. They hadn't given up on effecting repairs, but time had run out for them. They fired on us the second they spotted our approach. That's one thing I'd come to understand about the squids. They weren't big on peace talks. Their only attempts to communicate had been made through their litter mates, all of whom were now dead. A wobbling black projectile was sailing toward our advancing line. I knew it was gas, as did everyone else. We dived away from the impact point, but I don't think anyone was dumb enough by this time to have their visors open in the face of this enemy. We pressed ahead, marching out of the coiled mists of gas like ghostly warriors. For the first time since I'd met the squids, I sensed a hint of fear in their behavior. This pleased me. Up until now, they'd been arrogant, self-assured, and merciless. After a brief, vicious fight, the last of them laid quivering and leaking fluids all over the deck. They hadn't asked for quarter, at least not in a way we could understand, and we didn't offer them anything less than death. It was butchery by the end, but I didn't have a qualm. The bridge was aquatic in nature. The rest of the ship had been filled with a breathable atmosphere, but the bridge was enclosed in a shallow tank of water. I figured this was probably a luxury for the squids. They were an aquatic species who were able to function well on land, but it hadn't been comfortable for them. Encircling the central pool of liquid were banks of instruments. They weren't designed the way we would have done it. The controls were large, and most of them were disc-like knobs without labels. I thought such a control system might be easier for a race with tentacles to operate than buttons, touchscreens, or levers. Six of them floated in the middle of the control panels in their pool of dark water. I eyed the corpses, intrigued despite myself by these aliens. How many years had these creatures been enslaving my kind? It was bad enough that we'd abandoned our colonists out here. These aliens had put an extra twist into our callous handling of exiles. I thought that killing the monsters which had tormented our people for so long was the least Legion Varus could do for our long-lost cousins. The road had been long, but victory was finally ours. When we finally were certain we'd taken the entire ship, there was a ragged cheer from the units, but not much more. We were exhausted, both emotionally and physically. The celebration, if you could call it that, rapidly degenerated into troops stretching out on their backs and gasping like beached fish. We were so glad it was over. A battle like this one seemed like an interminable grind. It wasn't only the marching around and the fighting that tired us. It was the tension that had filled our every step. We'd feared for our lives ever since we dared walk into this ship, knowing that we'd made it to the end of the campaign and that we'd probably get to live and sleep and eat proper food again was a great relief. But it also meant that all the nervous energy and adrenaline abandoned us. I saw men staring at nothing, even snoring on the decks, just a few minutes after the all-clear had been called. About 2 hours later, a delegation of VIPs arrived. Among them were Graves, the investigator, and even the Primus herself. As usual, the Primus looked like she smelled a cat box that needed cleaning. Graves didn't seem to have any emotion, but he did give me a nod of greeting. I nodded back, then leaned against a control module that was shaped like an octagon and was about the size and weight of a fire plug.
"Who gave the order to attack the bridge?"
the Primus asked, staring around her. She had her hands on her hips, and her lips were twisted. It took me a moment to figure out what her problem was. A group of techs were with her, and they had buzzers out, the kind that took movies of everything. When I saw her standing on the deck, loaded with alien carcasses and floating camera drones, I finally understood that she'd wanted to be present when the final push was made. She'd hustled up out of camp to be here, and she wasn't happy that the party was all over before she arrived. Finally, with obvious reluctance, Leeson walked up to her.
"Primus," he said, "I led the final action."
She stared at him, looking him up and down for a second.
"One of Graves' team, I see. Figures. Not one of you can follow a simple order. Any reason I should put you on a report?"
Leeson looked befuddled for a second.
"On report?"
"You were told to hold your position and wait for overwhelming force. You ignored my orders. Explain yourself."
"We were fighting all the way up here, and the enemy was effecting repairs on the ship. If I'd waited around, they might have flown off with it. I didn't want such a valuable prize to be lost, sir."
"Bullshit," she said. "You attacked to save your own hide. to make sure the enemy couldn't carry you off into space.
Leeson was finally getting angry. It wasn't good for an adjunct to mouth off to a primus, but he did it anyway.
So what if I did? He demanded. That's better than risking the lives to grandstand at the final moments of battle.
The two glowered at each other. Graves stepped forward, making calming motions with his hands.
Let's not lose sight of the important thing. We've won. The ship is ours. I would suggest you report this information to the Tribune personally, Primus Turov.
She nodded and took Leeson with her to act as a tour guide. Together they stalked away to make their reports to the Tribune. Tex followed her with their buzzers continually recording and transmitting everything. She wouldn't get the glorious pictures she'd wanted of herself striding in during the final moments, but she could at least pose with a big pile of alien bodies and equipment. The investigator stepped forward in her absence and addressed Graves.
"Beastly woman," he said, indicating Primus Turov.
Graves was bemused, but it barely showed.
"She's in command,"
he said. The investigator eyed Graves coldly.
"I overheard something disturbing," he said. "Did you tell your commander that you are now in possession of this ship?" "I believe I did say something to that effect."
The investigator shook his head.
"You were mistaken. This vessel and all her contents belong to us. Without our help, you could never have taken her."
Graves frowned slightly.
"Investigator, is that your title?"
"Yes, I am the principal investigator of the Hydra mission. There is no higher authority on the planet. Using antiquated words, you could call me a planetary governor."
Graves nodded.
"Sir, you would be well served to grasp certain realities. This ship isn't under your control, because we're the ones with military units inside it."
While Graves spoke, the investigator's eyes roved and landed on me. I was standing nearby listening while trying to appear as if I wasn't doing so.
"You there. You've been to my labs. Come forward, soldier."
I approached, reluctantly. I could recognize trouble when I met up with it. "Hello, investigator," I said. "Enjoying your victory?"
"What exactly is that supposed to mean?"
"I mean, these cephalopods have been enslaving and tormenting your people for a generation. Surely you must feel relief to see they're all dead at your feet. You've been saved, man." The investigator eyed me as if I were speaking an alien tongue. But slowly his expression shifted. He nodded at me.
"Well said,"
he replied at last.
"You're right. Gratitude is in order. The victory was achieved through cooperation. It's best for both of our factions to accept that reality. I'll tell you what, Graves. Let's co-occupy the ship. We know these beings. We've studied them for decades. We have labs and equipment you military types lack. In turn, I'm sure that your people have technology we don't possess. Together we can study the ship and mull over the findings. I've often found that if done properly, scientific methodology results in answers that become obvious to all."
Graves looked from me to the investigator.
"I take it you two know each other?"
he asked.
"Yes," said the investigator. "We've met."
Graves shook his head and chuckled.
"All right, I'll try to play it your way. It makes sense, but that doesn't mean you'll get away with it because I'm not in charge. You see that woman over there?"
Graves indicated Primus Turov, who was taking a victory lap around a severed tentacle that still twitched now and then as her team filmed it.
"She's going to be your biggest problem,"
Graves continued.
"Then I must convince her with unassailable logic,"
the investigator said, and took a step toward the Primus. Graves and I both moved to stop him.
"Bad idea," I said. "Listen to the Centurion for a minute."
The investigator paused and looked at Graves curiously.
"Fortunately, she's not in charge of diplomatic matters,"
Graves said.
"We have a higher authority. The leader of our entire legion is Tribune Drusus."
Before the Primus finished her report, Graves, the investigator, and I all walked down the ramps together, heading toward the exit. I liked the sound of the plan Graves had just come up with, and I thought it might just work. Chapter 32. The only good thing that came out of the cephalopod invasion was a new sense of cooperation between Legion Varus and the colonists. I didn't have to listen to any more muttering from the officers about taking them all out. They were humans, and though they'd given us plenty of resistance at first, once they worked with us, they'd been critical to our success. I dared to hope we were beginning to pull together as a species. Tribune Drusus flew out the day after we took the ship to survey the scene of the battle personally. Graves invited me to be there when he met with the Tribune, but at first I declined.
"You should come, McGill," he said. "Your actions in this valley were as important as anyone's. We brought this campaign to a successful conclusion, and you might as well get some of the credit."
I shrugged, which was possible now because we weren't wearing battle armor any longer. What a relief that was. My smart cloth uniform felt absolutely cushy after spending days encased in steel and chafing polymers.
"That's it?"
Graves asked, frowning at me.
"You don't care?"
"Oh, I care, sir. That's why I fought so hard to end this. But I'm not into playing the game with the brass. They can read the reports and watch the suit vids if they want to find out what really happened. If I get into the middle of it, I'm liable to step on toes. It's not worth it." Graves' eyes slid over to Primus Turov, who was doing everything short of putting on false eyelashes in anticipation of the Tribune's arrival. He looked amused for a moment, then looked back at me.
"Don't worry about her. To keep a high-profile position, one has to worry about how one appears to their superiors. She's got to play the game. You don't. Not really."
I nodded. "Can I ask you how long you've served in Varus, and how long she has, sir?" Graves didn't like the question. I could see it in his eyes. They became hard the way they looked before he executed a man for disobeying orders. But after that momentary flash of hostility, he relaxed again.
"Yeah, sure," he said. "I've been with Varus a long time. Most of the Primus-ranked officers are my juniors, I'll admit that. But that's because I play it my own way, the same way as you do, Specialist."
"So why do you want me to change my tune?" I asked, crossing my arms.
"Not for you," Graves said, lowering his voice. "For these people here, the locals. Their fate hasn't been decided yet."
"That's grade A bullshit, sir."
"Lower your voice, Specialist, and yes, I know it is. But you have to understand how things are. We're gambling with much more than our own piddly little lives. If we screw up, all of Earth will suffer. Hell, back home, they are already blaming us for Cankery 9. I'm not sure how the Nerbs and the Galactics are going to take the violations that have occurred in this system. They might be in an understanding mood, or they might want to make a clean sweep of things."
I winced when he mentioned the Nerbs. They were the bureaucrats of the Empire. They were unpleasant beings that only cared about the letter of the law, not justice. I didn't have the best relationship with them. I'd had unhappy encounters with them on more than one occasion in the past, and I was pretty sure they weren't going to like anything about what had happened on this planet. Earth had colonized Dust World, even if we hadn't known until recently that we'd managed to do it. Worse, a galactic ship had been destroyed. How would the Nerbs mete out judgment and punishment in this instance? I didn't even want to think about it. I frowned, took in a deep breath, and uncrossed my arms. I knew Graves was right. The brass had to make some hard decisions about the colonists and the fate of the Legion itself. You couldn't make choices like these with your heart. You had to use your head. The survival of our species wasn't always achieved in the cleanest manner. Legion Varus seemed to always be involved when things became particularly ugly. We were all about the gray area of morality. "All right," I said. "I'll tag along. You want me to keep quiet?" Graves chuckled.
"I'm not asking for miracles."
I followed him outside the alien ship and watched as a lifter floated down over the waters of the central lake. The ripples became furious as it dropped ever lower and landed on the shore. The ramp extended and squelched into the mud. Rockfish watched curiously as a delegation exited the lifter. At the center of a knot of officers was Tribune Drusus. He wasn't the tallest in the group, far from it. But somehow, the way his cloak of office trailed behind him and the purposeful manner in which he moved set him apart from the rest. You could just tell he was in charge. Primus Turov marched past me and met the Tribune on open ground. I could tell she was trying to move with just as much aplomb as Drusus did. She damn near pulled it off, too.
"Come on," Graves said.
I followed him, along with a half-dozen others. Most were centurions, the ones who died taking the alien ship. The only adjunct was Leeson, and I was the only enlisted man in sight. I felt like a fluffy cat in a dog kennel, but I tried not to show it. Turov clasped hands with Tribune Drusus, enveloping his hand with both of hers. Drusus nodded vaguely and ran his eyes over the crowd. Those eyes paused on Graves and me. I thought there was a spark of recognition when he saw me, but that might have just been my imagination. Probably he was just noting that the only enlisted guy was a head taller than the rest of the group. Finally, he looked back at Turov. She was babbling something about her official report and the sacrifices we all needed to make for the good of the Legion and the good of Earth.
"Well said, Primus," he said at last. "Have you got a secure location to talk?"
She paused for a moment.
"I was planning to give you a tour of the alien ship. Don't you want to survey the prize, sir?"
Her lips thinned, and I thought he was slightly annoyed.
"That can wait. Where's your nearest bunker?"
Turov's eyes drifted down the beach. I knew where she was looking, way back at our camp behind the ridge.
"That will be quite a walk, sir," she said. "I wasn't expecting..."
"Not expecting a counterattack? Or a second ship? How about an attempt by the natives to remove this vessel from our possession?" The Primus's mouth opened and shut again. To me, she looked like a curiously attractive rockfish.
"Unacceptable," Drusus said. "Set up the perimeter now. I want a bunker at the base of each of these ramps that leads into the ship.
No, let me correct that. I want two of the three ramps retracted. The last one, the one in the center, is to stay open for now. We'll set up bunkers with clear firing paths in all directions. Construct a few on the far side of the vessel. For all we know, it might be possible to open this ship on the other side as well."
"Yes, sir,"
the Primus said. She turned and relayed the orders to her staffers, who ran off like their butts were on fire. Drusus walked toward the knot of officers I stood behind.
"Graves, I might have known you were the one leading the charge into this behemoth ship. Congratulations."
Graves shook the Tribune's hand.
"I can't claim that honor, sir," he said. "Leeson was in command of the final push. I died right here on the doorstep."
"Pity," Drusus said, stepping up to Leeson. He had a frown on his face, as if he smelled something a little past its sell date.
"Congratulations," he told Leeson, eyeing him.
"Thank you, Tribune."
"What are you doing here, McGill?" Drusus asked next. Leeson opened his mouth to answer, but the Tribune stopped him with a raised index finger.
"Let the man talk, adjunct. He's good at that, as I recall."
"Sir," I said, snapping to attention, "Centurion Graves asked that I come along."
"Why would he do that?"
My eyes slid toward Graves, but I could tell I wasn't going to get any help from him. He was watching us detachedly.
"I was one of the first into the ship, and probably the first man to set foot on the bridge at the end. That might be why, sir."
"Not just that," Drusus said.
"You also organized local resistance to aid us. Without their help, we would have failed in our attempt to capture the ship. I'm sure you'll have valuable input before this gathering breaks up."
"That's true," I said. "The colonists really helped." I wondered why he was asking me if he already knew all that, but maybe he'd wanted to hear how I explained it. Sometimes I found my officers tricky and tiresome to talk to. Primus Turov had returned during our interchange and overheard us. She looked like she'd swallowed a bug.
That's an overstatement of the colonists' contribution, sir, she said crisply.
Not from what I've seen and heard, Drusus said, still looking at me. Finally, he turned toward the Primus. Turov, where were you during the assault? She looked startled.
At the final stages, I was marching through the ship to the upper decks, she said. I led the relief forces that—
Yes, Drusus said in a voice that suddenly seemed bored. Of course, I've read your report. Your cohort did very well under difficult circumstances. You're all to be commended. Now, do you have a secure location for us to discuss serious matters?
We don't have a bunker, sir. The big drones will take about an hour to complete the first of them, but we can go into a tent or the ship itself.
Go into an alien ship with unknown properties, are you serious?
We could go back to our camp, sir. It's behind that ridge.
Drusus followed her gesture and looked annoyed. I don't know why, I really don't, but when I see a problem and I have the solution in my head, sometimes I just can't keep it from coming out of my mouth. We could go down, sirs, I blurted, into the tunnels. They're quite roomy and secure.
What tunnels?
Turov asked acidly.
The ones we used to get under the enemy dome, Graves answered. That's an excellent idea. Before the attack, they served as a bunker for several hours.
In the end, we all went to the circle of rocks where our invasion of the ship had begun. Drusus surveyed the battleground with interest. There are laser strikes everywhere. This was a hard battle long before you reached the ship. What were your total revivals by the end of the assault?
Primus Turov looked concerned. We had somewhere over 1,000, sir.
Drusus whistled. Effectively, you wiped.
Not at all, Turov snapped back. At any given time, the cohort was never below half strength.
That is a technical distinction, but an important one. You're all to be commended for a hard-fought victory. He'd already said this, but I felt that he really did mean it this time. He looked troubled. He faced us all and spoke to the group. Look, he said. Whatever happens, you did your jobs. Not everyone sees it that way, but I do. Other cohort commanders have second-guessed every decision made here, but that's only to be expected. Frowning, I followed the group, after the Tribune's strange little speech, into the cool gloom of the tunnels. What the hell was the Tribune talking about? Why had the other cohort commanders seen fit to complain about our actions? I wasn't in love with Primus Turov, but we'd won in the end under her command. I didn't like the idea of other officers trying to nitpick our difficult battle when they weren't even here to participate or support us. The tunnels were dry and sandy. They smelled better than I remembered. Drusus circled up the officers, but I hung back in the shadows near the exit. I felt out of place. Turov, said the Tribune. Have a security team explore each of these tunnels 100 meters back. I don't want anyone listening in. Use buzzers as well, and do an electronic sweep. Oh, and everyone should put their tappers into conference mode. These orders took several minutes to follow. Drusus waited until all of the security people were back out of the tunnels before he got around to the point. He faced the circle of officers with a very serious expression on his face. The Nairb ship has arrived, he said. This caused a visible reaction. We'd all known he had to have a reason to bring us down here. The arrival of any galactic ship was good news, in my opinion. Why all the secrecy? These thoughts rang out in my head, but I said nothing. I could tell the other officers weren't clear on what the big deal was either.
Excellent news, sir, said the Primus experimentally. We're as good as rescued.
Not at all, Drusus said. Tell me, Primus, how will the Nairbs judge our actions here in this system?
I'm not certain, sir.
Exactly, Drusus said, nodding. What if they find our efforts lacking? What if they decide the system is to be expunged?
It's just the Nairbs, sir, she answered. Surely the Galactics themselves will come to make their own decisions?
Drusus shook his head. No,
That's not how this will happen. The Nerbs will perform their investigation. They will make their decision, and they will call for the battle fleet. At that point, action is almost assured.
Why is that, sir?
Graves asked. Please understand that due to my office, I'm privileged with information that the general population is not aware of.